Hard work beats talent when talent doesn't work hard. That's why when it comes to hard work, nothing works harder than a Chevy Silverado. No wonder Chevy Silverado is the official truck partner of the Chicago Bears. Check out a new Silverado at ChevyDriveChicago.com.
Coming up, we have Stephanie Zimmerman, a reporter for the Chicago Sun-Times, who also is scouring the grocery stores for the prices and what has gone on in the past few months since the change in Washington, D.C., and how much we're paying over there in the grocery line. Stephanie, how are you?
Hey, I'm good. How are you?
I am doing fantastic. Tell us about the cost of groceries in Chicago.
Yeah, so we decided to check 35 shopping basket items at four different stores in Chicago. And like you said, this was because in the last presidential election, there was so much talk about the high price of groceries. And President Trump said, you know, if I'm elected, I'm going to get prices down on day one. Now, you know, people were really feeling it with these grocery prices. They had gone up during the pandemic. You remember the inflation coming out of the pandemic. Grocery prices were up about 28% from 2019 to 2024. So when people went to the polls, they were really angry about it. So anyway, we decided to see what's happening now. Because of this promise, I'm going to get prices down on day one. And we came up with a shopping basket of 35 items that people would, you know, normally buy. So it included fresh items like milk, bread, you know, eggs, fresh produce, meats, also some frozen food, a lot of items from major manufacturers that people would know, you know, things like ground coffee and candy and cookies, diapers, toilet paper, toothpaste, all kinds of stuff. And from, they're from some of the biggest manufacturers in America. So Procter & Gamble, Kraft Heinz, Nestle, Tyson, Mondelez, Mars, Coke, General Mills, these are all brands that people are familiar with. And we started tracking them at four different stores: Jewel, Mariano's, Target, and Walmart. So that represents most of the stores in Chicago. And we checked them once a month on the same day, same exact products, just to see what was happening.
So I heard a story the other day that said that the cost hasn't gone up, but the manufacturers know that they have the ability to increase it on us. And it might not be as much the administration's fault. And I'm not saying this partisan way at all. I don't care. But that the fact of companies are using the lack of knowledge and the lack of trust that everybody has for everybody these days to just boost prices. You think there's anything to that, or do you think it really is a tariff issue?
No, you know what? The tariffs actually haven't even really shown up in the groceries yet. Some of the items on our list are, you know, depending, these tariffs are like on again, off again, right. So we don't really know yet. So we're watching the coffee, the bananas, avocados, chocolate, stuff that's not made in America. We might see those go up, you know, towards the end of the year. I think the tariffs, people are mainly concerned about things like electronics, clothing, Christmas toys, stuff like that, right? I think on the political side of it, you know, I think no politician really has the ability to get prices down. So the promise was a little absurd to begin with, right? Because unless you're going to institute price control, how will you ever, as president, get prices down? I think what you are thinking of is, like, during the pandemic, there was a lot of talk about how some of these companies were making very healthy profits and giving back to their shareholders and doing stock buybacks and stuff as these prices were going up, which really leads many people to believe that the price increases that we saw, this 28% jump, you know, coming out of the pandemic, like, that maybe was not fully necessary, right? They might have been taking advantage of that time of inflation to add on a little bit extra for people, for sure. And people also notice shrinking products. And, you know, I don't know if you've ever done a show about that. I've written about that, where the price stays the same, but it just gets a little smaller.
Right. Well, I mean, that's the thing, right, is whether they increase the size or say it's bigger or smaller, and they manipulate, you know, kind of our senses for what we see and how we process the information versus what reality is. So do we think a lot of this is corporate greed and they get to blame it on politics? Or, I mean, listen, they've been charging more for guacamole at Chipotle for 3 years, and it doesn't go up or down. Once you get the chance to, what's the expression? The toothpaste is out of the tube. Once they get the chance to raise prices, who's going back and saying, you know what? Now we're gonna make the guacamole free. I mean, they never say that, right?
Yeah, don't wait for the guacamole to get free. I mean, I think what makes people so depressed is that those big increases that we saw, I mean, when you think about it, 28% from 2019 to 2024, that's our new floor. Those prices, by and large, are not really going to come down. What I found in tracking these 35 items at the four stores, and we're going to keep going with this because I think it's interesting. I want to see what happens, you know, towards the end of the year. But what we really found is that most prices are either staying the same or they're going up, with very few exceptions of a few here and there that went down. You know, I think what's happening now is we are just seeing kind of this slow rise because we're still at, you know, inflation is close to 3% the last go around. So we are still seeing prices going up, and I don't think anything's going down. The things that I noticed going up when I looked at, you know, this shopping basket of four items, at four stores at 35 items, at all four stores, there were five items that are all up in price. Ground beef, which people, if they've made hamburgers lately, they've probably noticed it's about $1 a pound more expensive. Also, Tropicana orange juice, a 12-pack of Coke, and I thought that was interesting, and I wondered if it had something to do with the aluminum in the cans. Yeah. Also, Always pads and Degree men's deodorant. Those five were up at all four stores. Well, at three of the four stores, we saw increases in hot dogs, peanut M&Ms, and Folgers ground coffee.
Well, two things. Number one, I was on an airplane the other day, and I don't think anybody was using deodorant, so I don't think we have to worry about the cost of that. But on a more serious note, and I was just saying how expensive it is to go to a ball game, we have to also look at what minimum wages have. And I think this gets lost in the talk about groceries is, you know, 2019, 2020, we were looking at the minimum wage in Chicago at being, I think it was $10 an hour in Cook County or in Chicago for the city minimum wage. And now I think it's at $15.50 or $16.50. I don't have the numbers in front of me. So we've seen the minimum wage in the city go up by 50%. So if groceries are going up by 28%, that would still mean that the average person is still ahead of the ballgame when it comes to increase in wages versus increase in goods. Yes?
Well, I don't know, because you have to think about the retailers themselves. They've got to pay their employees. So everybody's costs are going up, right? All the people that are running a grocery store, they have to pay their employees. Their light bill is probably more expensive. I know our ComEd rates are going up. I think consumers are getting hit with a lot of things. And you had asked earlier, like, what goes into these grocery prices going up? And the truth is that the retailers are the ones that set the shelf price. So the Jewels of the world or the Walmarts of the world, they're setting the shelf prices, but they're getting the bulk of that, you know, what goes into their decision making from these manufacturers. So it all starts with them, and then that goes farther down the line, right? So as their inputs go up, they're going to raise the prices. So I think there's a lot happening here right now, and I think just sort of my sense as a consumer reporter is that consumers are feeling really beleaguered right now because they feel like they're getting hit on all sides.
Well, we've got to wrap up this segment, Stephanie. I really appreciate it. But the interesting thing is I haven't seen the data yet that obesity is going down as the cost of food is going up. So people are still eating. I mean, maybe it could be increased prices at the grocery store will result in all of us being healthier and not eating as much. And we can save on Ozempic.
And you know what? That is a tip. One of the tips that we have in the Sun Times is to batch cook homemade food and freeze it for your lunches and dinners because, you know what, it will be healthier for you and you won't be paying that extra money for that overprocessed food. So I hear you.
Okay. So now we are going to talk to Tom Appel from Consumer Guide Automotive, and we're going to talk about an article on Subaru and talking about automobiles. Tom?
Yeah.
Talk to me. I thought Subarus were only in Colorado.
You know, I've been to Colorado and it seems like all of them are there.
Right? I went to school in Colorado. I think every third car was a Subaru.
It's funny because if you drive around Denver, it seems like everyone wants Foresters, which is a small crossover. But if you go to the Northeast, it's the Outback. People seem to love the Outback there, but Subaru people do love Subarus.
I mean, it's got to have one of the best loyalty factor of any car. It just seems like, and they drive, I mean, the average, they have to put a couple hundred thousand miles on them, right?
Yeah, they seem to last a long time. People love them. The resale values are great, so people who own them appreciate that. And then if you live in Chicago and you own a Subaru, there are 8-9 times a year when you are, like, just gloating about how good your car is in the snow.
So are they moving into electric vehicles now, Subaru, or no?
They are, but more quickly than we might have thought, given circumstances and where they were before. Back in 2022, Subaru introduced a vehicle called the Solterra. Nice little car. It was electric, a little bit pricey, and it was really built for Subaru by Toyota. People probably don't know this, but Toyota owns about 20% of Subaru, and they do some backroom engineering.
I had no idea.
Yeah, it's kind of a secret. And additionally, Toyota owns a chunk of Mazda, another little secret. But for 2026, they've got two new crossovers coming, both electric. They're promising some price relief on these things. We'll see where they go, because pricing is going to matter so much because the incentives are going away at the end of September. But they're a nice-looking vehicle. They were co-developed with Toyota, and they've got interesting names. One is called the Uncharted, and the other is called the Trail Seeker.
Now, I get why Subaru, it seems like they go for, obviously, a more earthy type of person in in Vermont and New Hampshire and Colorado, and those are the people that like Subarus, and they go camping, and they go into the mountains, and they do all that kind of stuff. I'm a city guy. To me, that seems like, wait a second, I'm going to take an electric vehicle, I'm going to drive into the middle of nowhere to camp, and there's no electricity. I mean, isn't that, it seems kind of counterintuitive to me.
Yeah, and interestingly, too, and to your point, the Solterra, Subaru's first and currently only EV, didn't really boast great range. It had about 220, 230 miles of range. So that would hinder some sort of long-distance adventure. The new vehicles are going to be closer to 300 miles.
Well, the good news is if the people that drive them are really hikers, if they get stranded, they can hike out and try to get more gas.
Exactly.
What other things are you seeing on the automotive front in the world of electric vehicles or anything else?
The electrical world is interesting because there's all sorts of plans being moved around, changed, and delayed. One of the biggest stories was that General Motors was going to take its Orion Lake plant, and that was going to be converted to full-time large pickup truck, electric pickup truck production. That has been put off again. Increasingly, we're seeing that there isn't that much demand for big, large pickups. So the Rivian, the Hummers out there, that's a GMC product, and then the Ford F-150 Lightning, and then the Chevrolet Silverado and the GMC Sierra. These vehicles are all out there. They're all selling kind of well, but not well enough for anyone to convert a whole plant to sell those things. And we'll see what happens with that. But there's been some foot dragging on the part of pickup truck buyers to convert to electric. And there's a lot of good reasons for that.
I saw the Ford Lightning, the F-150 Lightning. I was checking into a hotel, and somebody actually had it in the valet in the area, and I was looking at it. I think it's a sexy-looking car, but I heard, they're not selling great. And I was wondering a couple things. Number one, I had a pickup truck. I still have one for 12 years. I got my first one in 2012, got another one in 2019. And they didn't fit in my garage. They weren't mine had a regular combustible engine, so it wasn't electric. But I would think, number one, the charging station for most people is in their garage. Number two, pickup trucks don't fit in a lot of places, period, especially in urban areas. So parking them to get the electricity isn't easy. And then number three is that it tends to be, and now I'm doing a huge stereotype, but it seems to be that a more blue-collar worker, which has tended to go now to be more old-fashioned combustible engine, isn't into that electric. It's just not the right demographic for it.
No, that's exactly right. And Ram, which probably has the most conservative truck shoppers, has pushed back to the launch of its pure electric vehicle. And they're experimenting with and will launch first a plug-in hybrid vehicle called the Ram Charger. But to your point, garages don't work so well for pickup trucks in Illinois. Though the pickup trucks, large pickup trucks, are the best-selling vehicles really in America, they tend to be sold in the South, and Texas is a huge, huge market. People probably know that for big pickups.
Isn't it? This is an interesting thing, right? Pickup trucks have forever been the best-selling, or traditionally have been one of the leading selling cars in America. And traditionally, they've been, for the most part, American-made. Obviously, Toyota makes them in some other places, but Chevy, Ford, and Ram, Dodge make them. And they last. You can get on mine, I think I have almost 200,000 miles on my 2012. And it's so interesting. They last the longest, and they're the number one seller. It's like if you give us quality, we'll continue to buy them.
Quality is super important for those trucks because loyalty is such a big deal. And you won't find more loyal shoppers than people who are loyal to Chevy or Ford or to Toyota too, or Ram. But there have been some serious reliability issues. General Motors is recalling about 100,000 trucks for a problem with its big V8 engine, the 6.2 liter. Toyota had a problem with its turbocharged V6. And these are really expensive recalls and probably damaging to the brand long term.
Any insight into why you think the problems are existing now?
Well, there's a couple things going on here. One thing that has happened, and we're hearing more about recalls in the last few years, is that the media is really good at sussing out the problems that these cars have, sort of forcing manufacturers to come clean sooner about recalls. And people may have heard that Ford is now recalling about, I think it's 5 million cars this year. It's had a bunch of problems, and I think it's a statistical problem for them. They just had a bunch of problems in a short period of time, and it looks terrible. But ultimately, I'm not entirely sure quality has slipped. I think that customer expectation of quality has risen, and manufacturer accountability is a bigger deal now, especially in the social media era.
We'll leave it there, Tom. Consumers have higher expectations. They don't want to work as hard, and we always want something for nothing. Thanks, Tom. Always good to have you. And let's break for the news.